or reject the company's interpretation, the plain language interpretation, that a finding of causation is required before a review and allotment may be awarded. Nor did he accept or reject the union's contrary interpretation that this was a job security provision that prevented any contracting out while employees were on layoff. He simply jumped to review an allotment without explaining why, and certainly without making any finding of causation. So the award fails to draw its essence from the contract and under the established standard must be vacated. The second reason is the unique procedural posture of this case. After the company appealed, the court's Rule 33 settlement process produced a formal agreement between the parties to submit their dispute for a final resolution to a new arbitrator, in which the meaning and application of paragraph 1.03 would be resolved. The resulting Perkovich Award did resolve those issues by holding that paragraph 1.03 requires the union to prove causation before review and allotment kicks in, and finding that the union had not done so. But the union was not happy with that resolution, and so it continues to insist that the Casher Award requires the party to engage in the review and allotment process, and it continues to threaten the company with contempt sanctions and back pay based on the old Casher Award rather than accepting the Perkovich Award to which it agreed.
Now, what are we supposed to look at here? What's the final word before us? We obviously, this thing, it went to settlement conference apparently, didn't come up to us.
Right.
And that, for some agreement there, it went back and goes to Mr. Perkovich. Is his the final word, or do we have two? Are we on 2 feet here going forward? Where are we?
Well, it is the final word. First of all, here's what Perkovich said about the arbitration, the third arbitration. He said the terms and conditions of this arbitration are a result of an agreement between the parties to suspend litigation currently pending in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And that litigation was the appeal from the Casher Award. So the parties agreed to, in the Rule 33 process, to submit to a new arbitration. And phase one of that new arbitration was to determine the meaning of this paragraph 1.03. Is causation required, like the company said, or is it not required, as the union said? He held that it is required. And then in phase two, he applied it to a subset of the laid-off workers, to 155 construction workers. I think there were about 600 workers laid off altogether. So based on that, if the union wants to argue that the remaining workers, that there was a causation, that the subcontracting did cause their layoff or did cause them, or prevented them from being rehired, it can file a grievance and go to another arbitration, but that has to be done under the standard that was established in the Perkovich Award.
Did the settlement...
The fourth arbitrator then?
Is there a fourth arbitrator?
Was there going to be? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm saying that because in phase two of the Perkovich Award, that only applied to a subset of the laid-off workers, 155 of them. If the union thinks it can prove causation for the others, it's free to go to another arbitration and try to do so, but it has to do so under the standards set forth in Perkovich phase one.
What were the precise terms of the settlement? Did the parties agree to be bound by the decision of the third arbitrator? That was my understanding. And did the settlement agreement provide for dismissal of the pending appeal upon conclusion of that arbitration?
It did not, Your Honor. But the parties each signed a document. It was signed by Mr. Cornfield and by attorney for the union, or for the company, and it said that the new arbitration would provide, quote, a final resolution of the interpretation of paragraph 1.03 relative to the 2002 layoffs.
Well, doesn't that resolve the appeal?
Well, we think it should, but as long as the union is threatening to use the Casher Award in continuing arbitrations, and as you can see by its cross appeal, continuing to threaten us with contempt sanctions, and continuing to say that laid-off workers are entitled to back pay based on the Casher Award, we would like to think everything is mooted out by the Perkovich Award, but unfortunately the union's position hasn't allowed us to do that. It's sort of like a landmine that's been buried from an old war that's threatening to explode.
Well, I don't understand that procedurally. If the parties agreed to be bound by the Perkovich Award as the final determination of the party's dispute on the proper interpretation of this clause. I don't know why we're here, other than on the 60B, the district court's refusal to give a ruling on the 60B.
Well, you know, it's all kind of related. I mean, we're here because the union is continuing to insist that the cash, despite the Perkovich award, the cash reward has continuing force. And so either we need to have the cash reward vacated or the district court judgment enforcing it vacated by a 60B or whatever procedural mechanism. But the point is that with the Perkovich Award supposedly settling everything, but with the union claiming that the cash reward still has this continuing force, the intervention of the court is needed in order to provide some guidance to the parties and to prevent this issue from continuing to fester and poisoning a very critical issue in terms of collective bargaining relations.
Do we have the settlement agreement in the record?
Yes. There are actually two signed agreements. The first is at SA 72, and the second one is at SA 73. And SA 73 is where, in the first paragraph, it says that the parties are seeking a final resolution of the proper interpretation and application of Section 1.03 relative to a layoff that occurred in 2002.
That's just this handwritten document?
Well, no, the handwritten document set forth what was going to happen in that arbitration. But the next page, Your Honor, is about a 10, 12-page, no, it's not that long, but it's a several-page agreement between the parties that at SA 81 is signed by lawyers for both parties. And in the first paragraph on SA 73 is where they agree that it would be the final resolution on the meeting and application.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the Perkovich jumped over Kayser and went back to Flagler and said that Flagler had set the law of the case and basically wiped out the main thrust of the second arbitrator, didn't he?
Well, actually, no. He made his own independent findings and determination.
Whatever the language was in Flagler was therefore a part of the contract?
That was part of his reasoning, but he also found that, specifically found, that Flagler's determination that causation was required was reasonable based on the language of the contract, and he made further findings that that actually the subcontracting decreased after the layoffs began and that none of the subcontracted work was work that had been performed by bargaining unit members. So he made his own determinations both in terms of the meaning of the contract provision and applying the causation standard, which had not been done at all by arbitrator Kasher.
Just to try to understand this here, and I don't know, but I've not seen a case where we've had this many arbitrators making this many decisions. But as I understand it, put it in simplified terms, your side really likes this Flagler arbitration decision. The other side likes Kasher. And one of the big arguments here, as I see it, is whether Kasher, in looking at what Flagler did, determined that Flagler ever considered what would happen after this big layoff.
Yeah, well,
and that's this whole res judicata argument, I suppose. But
yeah, we're not relying on res judicata at all because
you're withdrawing all those claims on res judicata.
We don't have a res judicata claim here. The Flagler arbitration concerned whether the contracting caused the layoffs that had been announced. After the layoffs took place,
as opposed to just a business being bad.
Yeah, I mean, both Flagler and Perkovich found that the sole cause of both the layoffs and the failure to recall the laid off employees once the layoffs took place was the unprecedented decline in business conditions. But that doesn't mean that the Flagler case was necessarily preclusive, although I think there'd be a good argument for that point. I think more important here is that once we had these two what appeared to be conflicting decisions, that the parties reached an agreement with the help of the court settlement program to provide for a third arbitration to finally settle the question, what does this provision mean
well,
and how should it be applied?
That goes right back, I think, to Judge Sykes' first question of why didn't that all get resolved?
Well, as far as we're concerned, it should have been resolved, but again, because the union continues to insist that the cash reward still has continuing force, that the party is bound to engage in this review and allotment process, and continues to say that to threaten us with sanctions and with back pay proceedings based on the cash reward, it's got continuing impact until a court says otherwise, and that's why we're here.
Well, another reason you're here, which is so unusual, at least the way I see it, is that this thing was intercepted by the settlement conference, which is not us. That didn't get to the Court of Appeals. It was pending. And then there's an agreement, and it goes back. Then when it gets back to the district court, he quickly notes, hey, I've lost jurisdiction on this. He didn't say as much, but that's what happened. Right. This is the notice of appeal. It's on appeal. So it goes right back, and instead of him looking at all three of these in combination, we now get Perkovich up here, and then still a controversy between Flager and Casher awards. So the question is, do we make the final ruling here? Does it go back to the district court for him to consider all three in combination? Or do we decide here and then or remand to dismiss or something? Or what is the procedural from your point of view?
Well, our preferred solution would be for the court to say that, look, the parties reached this agreement, it's in the record, the Perkovich Award applies and it overrides whatever it was that the cash
you devote about 5% of your brief to.
Well, it's raised in our brief. It's true we devoted more time to an independent reason why the court can resolve this here, which is that arbitrator Casher simply didn't interpret this key provision of the contract, and under the court's precedence, where you don't interpret the key provision at all, then the award should be vacated. I think the court actually foresaw that situation in its Ethel opinion, where the court did not vacate the award, but it said if there was a condition precedent to a benefit and the arbitrator did not find that condition precedent satisfied but awarded the benefit anyway based on fairness, that the district court should set aside the award. And that's our argument on the essence of the contract here. That's exactly what happened, kind of like in the court's Amex Coal case where a condition precedent to an award was not satisfied and the court did vacate the award. Based on the established standard, which is narrow but which fits the cash reward like a glove, the cash reward should be vacated on that basis as well. And I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Cornfield.
I think what I need to do is address Judge Sykes.
Well, there are all three of us. You can.
If I might, the question posed by Judge Sykes, and from listening to the appellant's argument, I think we're very confused on the facts. The agreement that we're concerned about is Section 1.03 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement. Arbitrator Perkovich had before him a limited amount of contracting out that had taken place after and during the layoff. The parties agreed that limited amount of contracting out, that is, he only had a limited amount of all the contracting out that took place, a certain amount of construction work. That information had come to the union during the course of the Casher proceeding, where we had obtained a subpoena from arbitrator Casher for all the contracting that had been going on since the layoff. The company had complied only with part of that subpoena and given us certain information concerning construction work. This bargaining unit covers all of the company's operations in Illinois and Northwest Indiana except operator services. It ranges from commercial, marketing, construction, installation, repair, etc. So what Perkovich had before him was just a small amount of the subcontracting. There had been 600 people laid off. Most of the people laid off were technicians from the installation and repair operations of the company. The layoff was a result primarily of the company reducing the amount of construction work. That's the laying and maintenance of cable from central offices.
You say refusing?
I'm sorry.
What was the word? Refusing the amount? I missed that verb.
It was a limited amount.
Yes, but
dealing with construction.
You said the company what on the construction work?
The company had reduced the amount of construction work. That caused a substantial number of jobs lost among construction technicians. We'll call them linemen. These construction technicians had seniority. So under the contract, they had the right to so-called bump people with less seniority, who are mainly in insulation and repair. So most of the people that actually were laid off were insulation and repair technicians. So what Perkovich had before him was just a snapshot of part of the...
Do you mean Perkovich or Flager?
I'm talking about Perkovich.
Okay.
Had before him a certain limited amount of contracting out work that had taken place in construction, not even all of the subcontracting in construction, just a limited amount. He found that the limited amount of contracting work that was taking place in construction during the layoff was of the same type of work that had taken place beforehand. Not all the contracting out, just this limited amount.
Was that what you said, a limited amount, were these people that was contracted out, this is work they were not doing before?
They were doing. It's called shared work.
All
it
right,
was
so
work that was both being done by bargaining unit personnel and contractors.
Right, so it was then a dual situation
yeah,
before.
Shared, the
okay.
word that they
Well, that's informative.
But getting to Judge Sykes' point, or question, I'm sorry, is what Perkovich ruled was there were 600 people laid off out of a bargaining unit of approximately 12,000. That the amount of contracting out of this type of construction work that had taken place after the layoff went down more so than the number of laid off personnel proportionally. So let us say, for example, that it was 50-50 before the layoff.
Shared work?
Shared work. In construction, we're only dealing with a small part of the whole operation. And the amount of contracting out went down by the same percentage as the number of people laid off. So Perkovich held, rightly or wrongly, that the company had the right to continue to contract out the same type of work they had contracted out before layoff as long as it was reduced proportionally.
Counsel, your description of the Perkovich Award is totally inconsistent with the language of that award and with the parties' agreement as reflected in the joint pretrial conference statement before that arbitration signed by both parties and the handwritten document that apparently emanated from the Rule 33 mediation here that both parties also signed, characterizing what the arbitrator was going to decide. The Perkovich Award speaks in general terms. There is a specific holding, it's true, but it speaks in very general terms about the interpretation of Section 1.03 of the party's contract, and it purports to enter into and does enter into a definitive interpretation of the meaning of that clause in the contract. It was not nearly as narrow as you're attempting to portray it.
I'm looking for the part where I quote extensively in our briefs from the Perkovich Award.
Let me ask you a more direct question then, rather than just reciting what's in your brief, which I've read. The agreement that you signed says that this third arbitration, will be a final resolution of the proper interpretation and application of Section 1.03 of the party's collective bargaining agreement. and then later refers to the mediation that produced this agreement and that the parties agree to resolve their dispute, the one that's pending in this court, about the conflicting arbitration awards from Flager and Kasher, pursuant to this bifurcated arbitration process that would occur before arbitrator Perkovich. I don't know how we can interpret that as other than a final resolution, because it says that's what it's going to be.
Final resolution,
if I might. And that's how arbitrator Perkovich also describes it.
If I might respond, Your Honor, I have to disagree with you. But the Perkovich Award, if we accept the Perkovich Award as interpreting and applying the term causation post-layoff, is that as long as the subcontracting is reduced proportionally to the number of people in the bargain unit laid off, then there's no causation. He makes that point. Kasher said the company has to provide the union with all the subcontracting that's taking place. Your Honor, we cannot stand here right now, and based upon Perkovich, one, we don't know all the subcontracting that's taken place because the company refuses and has refused to honor the Kasher Award, which is to provide us with the information. Two, we don't know, and if I might say, Your Honor, I don't think you do, whether or not the subcontracting that take place after the layoff by the company pursuant to the Kasher Award was proportional to the number of people laid off in the bargaining unit. We don't know that. That's what Perkovich said, rightly or wrongly. He didn't say the company has the right to subcontract at will. He didn't say
actually,
that at all.
Actually, he did. That's how he interpreted Section 1.03, as a broad right of subcontract conditioned only upon this causation issue. And if the union can't demonstrate that the layoffs can't provide that nexus, I think is how he referred to it, the causal nexus, then you don't get the review and an allotment process that Kasher awarded.
Let me respond again. SA 95, reading from the Perkovich Award. However, the record shows the contracting out after the layoff has decreased when compared to the pre-layoff levels, and the nature of the work performed by contractors has not included tasks they did not perform before. And before that, he says, if that were true, the contracting out would have remained at the same levels as before the layoff and might have even increased, etc. That's his point.
That's phase.
But that's not all the subcontracting, Your Honor. That's what he was dealing with, this very limited amount, as Mr. Sorrell said, that only affected 150 of the 600 people laid off.
Right. That's phase two of the arbitration.
That's the final decision.
Phase one is the interpretation of the contract language, and there's no way that Kasher's award can be reconciled with Perkovich's
as far as the
contract language is concerned.
What you're saying, and I believe, is that under Perkovich, the company has a complete right to subcontract at will after the layoff, and I cannot read his decision, and no one else has read that decision that way. If I might say, Your Honor, I think you are reading, you are substituting your judgment for arbitrator Perkovich.
Well, wait a minute. That's not exactly right. We were that's the final order that we got. Now, maybe there are some nuances here, some things that were in more detail that weren't presented, but it does appear that this was an effort. Now, maybe they didn't get enough. I don't know why it was limited, as you say. Why did they only focus on a certain group?
I can explain that, Your Honor, if I have time. I can explain it if I have time. What happened was, during the course of the Kasher proceeding, we obtained a limited amount of information on subcontracting. The company refused to give us all of it. We filed a separate grievance on that. The company refused to arbitrate that grievance. During the course of mediation, they agreed to arbitrate that grievance.
Is the this result, a mediation at
here, yes,
here. Okay.
The result of that decision, rightly or wrongly, was Perkovich stated, in effect, that if the subcontracting that's taken place since the layoff has gone down proportionally to the number of people laid off in the bargaining unit, proportionally, that is the meaning of cause. We don't know, because there's been no compliance with Casher concerning the total amount of subcontract. Perkovich did not rule that the company had the right to subcontract at will. He rightly or wrongly interpreted cause. Now we need the information ordered by Casher to determine, even under Perkovich's view, whether the company subcontracted excessively or the subcontracting that took place after the layoff went down proportional to the number of people laid off.
So if there were, let's say, 10% reduction in contractors, and what is over, what was this, a 20% reduction in the
bargaining unit? Was 600 out of 12,000, was about 5%.
5%. So let's say it's only a 3% reduction in contractors and 5% in the bargaining group. Then you would say you've got seniority.
Right.
Would be able to bump certain people who are still working under contract.
Exactly, Your Honor. And in order to have that information, we need Casher, because Casher says you cannot have the parties jointly meeting to discuss what subcontracting can be, the work be reassigned to the bargaining unit, unless the union has the information. The company is saying, oh, you've got to prove it to us, when they're refusing to provide the information to
but,
us.
But, counsel, that involved an interpretation of the agreement that did away with any causation requirements. Casher's award is based on an interpretation of Section 1.03 that does not require proof of causation before the review process and allotment process kicks in. And that's what's so fundamentally inconsistent with Perkovich's award, because he held in no uncertain terms that that is a condition precedent to
Your Honor,
any
we can go
of
back
review and
forth.
Allotment.
This is the same argument that the company advanced and was rejected by arbitrator Perkovich. I can't be in the position of simply arguing with you. I'm sorry. I've used my time.
You got time left. That's only orange. It goes red. That's when you're out of here.
Now, there is a way in a short time. Flagler, Casher, and Perkovich interpret language of 1.03. Flagler ruled that the contracting out, and I think Judge Mannion referred to this, that took place before the layoffs did not cause the layoff because the company did not engage in the contracting in order to lay off. But Flagler reserved and made it very pointed that he would not rule on subcontracting after the layoff. Casher ruled that in order for the provisions of the contract with respect to post-layoff to take place for joint review, the information on subcontracting has to be shared with the union. The company has refused to do that. I've indicated with Perkovich. Perkovich says that causation means post-layoff, that the amount of subcontracting, as long as it's not new subcontracting, must go down proportionally with those on layoff. That's where we stand. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Sarles, you got a couple minutes.
Yeah, just 2 points, Your Honor. First, Judge Sykes got it exactly right as far as the Perkovich Award. Phase one was universal in terms of what this provision means. Now, this was the first layoff in the company's long history, and so it was very important to get the standard right in terms of subcontracting and layoffs, and that was the purpose of Phase 1. Phase 2 did apply it only to 155 workers. If the union wants to apply it now to others, it's free to do so, but it has to prove causation. Now, the second point is Mr. Kornfield raised this question of, well, how's the union supposed to get the information to prove causation? And there's two ways. One, it can ask the company. And if it's dissatisfied with what the company gives, it can file a grievance. And in that grievance and in the succeeding arbitration, it can seek discovery of the information that it needs to prove causation. We have no problem with that. What we do have a problem with is leaping over the causation requirement to review an allotment, which is a much more burdensome task to comply with. So there's really no information problem here. The union never sought the information and never provided the information to any of the arbitrators in which to prove causation.
Now, is that because there was some limitation in discovery or time or what? Why is this all speculative? Why is this guesswork at this point?
Well, it's not really guesswork.
Guesswork at how many contractors there were as opposed to bargaining unit people.
Well, I mean, we've given the union 21,000 contracts. It demands, based on the Casher award, tons of more information that much of which is not in the party's control. But it wasn't an accident. The problem was that the union's position was that it didn't need to prove causation based on its interpretation of the contract, so it never tried. It didn't give any evidence of causation to the arbitrators, and they had nothing on which they could find the causal link that was required to order review and allotment.
Now, procedurally, what do you propose? Do we end it here if we take Berkovich? Does it have to go back to the district court?
We think that the court has enough in the record in front of it to decide the question here. But if it does remand, that it do so with instructions based on the fact that the party's agreement that the Berkovich award would end the dispute should trump the prior rulings or non-rulings. Again, I think that there's enough in the record for the court to decide that question.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. And thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.